have some self-awareness and sort of catch out your logical flaws, because you can always justify to yourself, I do this and that and this and that. Like, I want to, do all these boot camps. I want to do running. I want to get good at cardio. I'm going to do yoga. I'm going to do gymnastics. I want to do CrossFit, and I want to build muscle and lose fat. It's like, that is all well and good in fairyland.
Yeah.
In the real world, it just doesn't fucking work.
That there, my friends, is the voice of Jacob Skippis. And today we are talking all things hypertrophy, muscle growth, which I'm sure you guys are riveted by. Now, before we get into the full conversation, I want to say welcome. Welcome back to the podcast. If it's your first time listening, this is the Vegan Body Coach Podcast, and it's all about bringing up-to-date information, evidence-based information about plant-based nutrition, about training, and about lifestyle. And we interview a lot of amazing guests on here, and this is episode number 8. Thank you for joining me, and if you are still on lockdown currently, I feel for you. If you're not in the gym, if your gym's still closed, I absolutely feel for you. Here in New Zealand, we are back into it. The gym is open, so it's been a busy couple of weeks for myself, getting clients back in, and getting things underway once again. But I do want to give a quick intro to Jacob before we get started. So back in 2018, I attended a conference in Melbourne, Australia, which I've talked about on this podcast before. And that conference was run by Jacob and his team at JPS Health and Fitness in Melbourne. And the team over at JPS are just an incredible bunch of people, a bunch of coaches who do incredible personal training and put out some content that is really raising the bar, raising the standard of the fitness industry. And you'll know, just as I do, that the majority of the personal trainers that you see around the globe are pretty average. And that's a little bit of a understatement there. The information they're providing is very bro. It's very old school. A lot of it is based off pseudoscience, and none of it is based off the research and what's coming out and being current. And I find for myself, even in my own practice, I'm constantly having to go over the information that's been put out by other trainers with my own clients and dismiss it and come up with the reasons why it's a myth or why that thing is not based by evidence. And what Jacob and his team are doing are putting out some great information that is backed by the evidence and backed by the research. And they're just great guys as well. And they're all into supported bodybuilding and powerlifting. They're not type of scene, but they brought together a group of around 11 presenters from around the world, top minds in the industry, to come to this conference. And it's an amazing 3-day event where we get to meet like-minded people, chat, go out for meals. We have a practical day where we're in the gym and we're training. And for me, it was just this awesome moment of like, oh wow, there are other people similar to myself. I've got amazing friends here in New Zealand, but it's not like they're all about training, all about nutrition, and living that kind of lifestyle. And when I go to these conferences, suddenly I'm surrounded by these people, and we're so privileged to have that. I mean, we say you were growing up in the early 1900s or even earlier in history, I mean, you have the ability to connect with people all around the world that are similar to yourself. Not really. You're usually limited to the people that are in your village, in your town. But now we just have this plethora of community that is available to us, and it's so amazing. And so I got to meet these people and hang out, and I sort of developed a relationship with the JPS crew. I ended up actually bringing on Jacob as my coach for the pretty much for all of 2019, I believe. And so we worked through some hypertrophy phases and did a lot of training in the gym. So he was coaching me remotely, and so we've had that background as well and achieved some great muscle gain results there. We also went through a bit of a fat loss phase last year before my time at Journey Retreats, and achieved some great results there as well. But today, I wanted to bring you this discussion because I think the information about muscle growth is very limited, and usually you get that information from someone at the gym, your bro at the gym, or someone who's a little bit bigger than you are. Usually everyone just goes to the biggest person and goes, hey, how do you build muscle? And that's not taking into account genetics or lifestyle factors or any other things such as special sports supplements, for example. But We have data, we have research on how to effectively build muscle, and a lot of this stuff is covered at these conferences, and we sort of dive into the nitty-gritty. And today's going to be a sort of a practical look at how you can take away, you know, what is in the research, make it practical, put it in the gym, and give it to the listener, you, to be able to implement. So, you know, we cover things like, you know, what is hypertrophy and what are the rep ranges best suited to growth? How hard should we train? What are the best rates of weight gain to achieve the maximum amount of muscle gain without a huge amount of fat gain? These are some of the things we're looking at today in this episode, and I hope you really do enjoy it. And a quick shout out to Jacob. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast. We have a great relationship, as I've already said, and you know, I was supposed to be over in UABC for the conference again this year. However, because of the COVID-19 situation, that one was being postponed till 2021. So, really quickly with Jacob, guys, just a quick disclaimer: he's not a vegan. He's not plant based. He does like his meat. I've been out to eat with him before, and we've had mountains of sushi, and so. This is something I do want to bring up, is that, you know, I never wanted this podcast to be a solely vegan interview podcast where I only interview people that eat only plants, right? There are so many people out there that have a huge amount of knowledge and experience on the ground that we can learn from and take from and implement. And when it comes to specifically hypertrophy, that it doesn't change whether you're vegan or whether you are a carnivore. The fundamentals of training for muscle growth is still the same. So this is why I brought Jacob on, because he knows the stuff inside and out. He's had many years in the trenches, and I know you guys are going to learn a lot from him. So yeah, I think it's important for us to remember that we need to be open-minded, that just because we are vegan, we're not above anybody. And you know, we need to be including other mindsets into our own sort of bubble and not become an insular in the way we think and the way we include people. I think it's a very important point. So guys, that being said, this is episode number 8 with Jacob Skippers. You are listening to the Vegan Body Coach Podcast, all about optimizing your strength, fitness, and physique through a plant-focused diet. My name is Jackson Burton, and I'm a nutrition and training coach for vegans, the plant-centric, and plant curious. I'm sitting down with athletes, experts, and influencers around the world to inspire you to create your best vegan body yet. All right, Jacob, so welcome to the Vegan Body Coach Podcast.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, Jackson.
No problems, man. If you want to come a little closer to that mic, or maybe just pull it off the table a little bit, and then you'll be nice and clear.
There we go.
Perfect. All right, we're going to talk some hypertrophy today, which I think is a topic, especially for this podcast, that I want to dive into deeply and give people quality information about, especially in the vegan community. There's probably a lot of maybe pseudoscience, bro science going on, and we can bring a little bit more quality to that. So, you know, you're the man for the job. So why don't we just do a quick little background about yourself, what got you into training, and what are you doing now, and that sort of thing.
Yeah, so firstly, thanks for having me on, Jackson. What got me into training was, like most young men, I was a little bit dissatisfied with how I looked. I wanted to be bigger, more muscular, leaner, you know, to pick up chicks, just yep. feel a little bit better about myself, confidence and self-esteem, all that kind of stuff. And yeah, got into lifting weights when I was about 15. Started doing that quite religiously since then, which is now nearly 14 years ago, so quite a while. And things just started to evolve over time. I really enjoyed lifting weights. I loved the process of learning more about what I was doing, about the human body, how we can change it, and all those sorts of things. And to a certain degree, I got pretty good at that. So went and did my Cert 3 and 4. I started coaching, personal training, I did some bodybuilding, powerlifting, and yeah, over the years now I'm in a very fortunate position to be able to not only coach my clients and athletes, but also mentor and teach other personal trainers in the industry, and basically just share my experiences and what I've learned, and hopefully help them avoid making the same mistakes I did. So
yeah,
that's really, how things have unfolded, man.
Yeah, and I think JPS has become a bit of a household name for quality information. And for the listeners, like we've discussed the UBC on this podcast a few times already, and you guys are the ones that put that on. So it's a quality sort of conference that brings in a lot of top names in the industry. And I think it's a real testament to what you guys are doing, that you're putting on such a quality conference and helping a lot of people out. So it's something I'll keep coming back to for sure. But I think, yeah, one of the reasons I came to you for coaching, so for the listeners, I did a year coaching with yourself, working on some hypertrophy goals. And I think the main reason was I saw a sort of before and after of one of your clients that you had worked with, who had done a bit of a gaining phase, but more of a lean gain phase, and also some good results in terms of that muscle gain there. So are you working with predominantly hypertrophy clients these days, or is it mainly powerlifting, or are you working with some gen pop? What are you doing?
Yeah, so I got a pretty broad mix, and I like to keep it that way because it keeps my finger on the pulse with not only working with a lot of different people, but also the different challenges that come with various training goals. So obviously hypertrophy has its own set of obstacles that people will face, as does strength training and powerlifting, and working with the general population, wanting to get healthier, leaner, and look better. They've all got very unique challenges. Not that there isn't carryover across the three, there is
right.
for sure.
Yeah.
But there are certain characteristics of each of those demographics that bring some very interesting issues that you have to troubleshoot. And I really enjoy the problem-solving side of things, and they're not so dissimilar that they're completely different wheelhouse. Mm-hmm. They have a lot of carryover, so I enjoy sort of working with all three. And I would say that the percentage of clients who are like bodybuilders, hypertrophy-focused, over the long haul would be around 50-60%, probably like 30% powerlifters, and then I've got about another 10-20% who might be your gem pops, just wanting to lose weight, build a little bit of muscle, feel better, all that sort of jazz. So
Man, and you're looking a little bit leaner at the moment. What are you working towards right now, bro?
I'm just trying to be healthy at the moment. Training where I can and as much as I can. Eating, just a lot more variety in my diet. Cool. So just trying to really tick the micronutrient boxes, not trying to drive weight up or down. It's just going to sort of fall where it lands. Eating, much more based on internal cues, so hunger, fullness, and not really trying to drive the scale in a specific direction. Cool. So a little bit of a different approach for me, which is strange because I've always been very goal orientated. I've either been trying to get maximize my strength for powerlifting, maximize muscle mass for bodybuilding, or lose as much fat as I can for bodybuilding. So this is just a nice change of pace. It works really, really well with everything else I have going on in life at the moment. So just trying to tick the boxes of training 3 to 4 times a week, eating good, high quality food, and letting everything else sort of be, and having training and diet sort of filter down into the background is very much conducive to driving other areas of life forward.
Nice. Yeah.
As you know, to drive training and your body composition forward when you get to elite levels, it's a lot harder and requires a huge time investment. So at the moment, I'm just happy to sort of let things hold. If they regress a little bit, fine, but I've got bigger fish to fry.
Nice. Yeah. No, that's probably a good break for you, man. Yeah. Probably a good change up.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. So let's talk some hypertrophy,
let's
bro.
Let's do it.
I think, people who don't know, they should probably go look at your Instagram, but you've got an incredible physique on you, and you've done a lot in terms of muscle mass and muscle building, and very strong as well. And we know there's some, some genetic components to that as well, but you obviously know a thing or two about training and hypertrophy. So, I think a good place to start would be to just round off some basics of hypertrophy. Like, what is the main drivers of muscle growth? Like, what do we need to look at? And we'll start there, hey?
Yeah, so hypertrophy is obviously the process of building muscle. And in the context of resistance training, we're looking at specific increases in muscle mass in a targeted muscle group, right? And the way that we achieve that is through imposing a mechanical stress on the muscle, and that leads to a cascade of chemical reactions that upregulates process called muscle protein synthesis, which leads to the rebuilding and subsequent growth of the muscle. So what's important for the listeners, without getting into full physiology lesson,
yeah,
is that we just want that mechanical stress. So if we think about just squatting with our body weight, obviously our weight against gravity imposes a stress on the muscle. Now, as we adapt over time, the body becomes resilient and less responsive to that same stress unless you start increasing the stress. You might be doing more reps. You might be doing more sets. You might be adding more weight. So there are various ways that we can increase this mechanical stress. And we don't always need barbell implements to build muscle. And you can see this in a lot of the research where they have participants on a Wingate bike,
right,
and they build, you know, quite a bit of muscle in their lower body. So it's not resistance training necessarily that builds muscle, and it's not necessarily an exercise that builds muscle. It is this mechanical stress that we impose on the tissue that leads to the growth signals that we need for it to rebuild and get bigger.
Yeah.
So that can be seen as the driver of hypertrophy. Mm. Now, if we look into that further, this mechanical stress needs to be increased over time because the body will adapt. And the way that we do that is we increase the magnitude or the duration of that stress. And you can think of that stress as like tension. So tension at the fiber level, on the fibers.
Yep.
So you can think about increasing the magnitude of tension. That could be, you know, weight on the bar, weight on the dumbbells, whatever it might be. So just increasing how potent that stress is. And the duration component, you can think about as the total exposure. So when it comes to hypertrophy, we need to tick two boxes. We need to have the stress to be within the threshold of what is going to be stimulating for growth. So it needs to be of sufficient magnitude, but we also need to do it for a sufficient duration and tick that exposure box.
Right.
So when we then extrapolate that into a very practical sense, we can see that we need to lift heavy enough and hard enough.
Mm.
So our intensity of training, which is that magnitude of tension component, so the intensity being our proximity to failure, so how close to failure we're going and how much weight is on the bar, and that exposure of tension component is how much work are we doing and for how long.
Yeah.
And that is our volume and the total number of like repetitions that we're doing, right?
Yeah.
So when we then build on that, we've seen in the literature that anywhere from 5 to 30 reps is the sweet spot for the hypertrophic range, although you can build muscle, as I said, with any exercise rep range. It's just the 5 to 30 rep range is probably best, so that's going to put you between anywhere from 30 to 40% of 1RM to 80% of 1RM, but you know, better range is probably 60 to 80% of 1RM.
Right.
And then we need that exposure component, and the research is starting to show that anywhere from about 8 to 20 sets per week per muscle group is the ballpark range that we need to be training within if we want to really start to optimize growth. And obviously there's a lot of individual variation in terms of how people respond to various rep ranges, intensities, and volumes. And then the third variable where we need to look at is frequency. Right. So basically we just want to train a muscle as frequently as we can, provided that it's recovered and we can get a potent enough stimulus to, you know, elicit that growth response again.
Yeah.
So that would generally mean that we're going to train most muscle groups anywhere from 2 to 3 times per week.
Right.
And there's a lot of factors that determine how often you can train a muscle, because yep. Frequency is not an independent training variable, meaning that it doesn't satisfy either of those requirements.
That's
for
right.
growth, does it? It doesn't satisfy the magnitude or the duration, but it allows us to organize when we impose the stress. So frequency is very important when we have the discussion of volume and intensity, but we just need to keep in mind that frequency doesn't actually do anything magical. It's just how we organize the training stress over time. So the time frame is being a microcycle, which is 7 days, mesocycle, you know, anywhere from like 4 to 8 weeks, and then macrocycle, longer periods. So they're the sort of big rocks when it comes to hypertrophy training. And there's a lot more nuance from there, and there's plenty more discussion to be had, but I think I'll leave it there. See if you've got anything that you want to ask based on that.
No, that's awesome. I think the big takeaways from that for people who are possibly, you know, we're probably talking to beginner to late intermediates here. And the big takeaway there is that you can't just distinguish between intensity and volume. They need to be together. They need to be concurrent. And it can't be just looking at one or the other, right?
Exactly right.
Because if you're having a certain amount of volume, say you're doing 20 sets for a muscle group per week, but you're not having the sufficient tension there, it's not going to be stimulative enough.
Mm-hmm.
And then vice versa, if you're just doing, you know, one set per week of a high enough intensity, yeah, sure, you'll grow to a certain extent.
Probably missing out on a bit.
But you're missing out, yeah. Right? So we need to look at those two together in a training program.
And frequency as well.
And then frequency is kind of, yeah, how often you're going to be implementing those two factors.
Correct.
Yeah, so.
So I would just say on that you're absolutely right. And those three variables are inextricably related, meaning that if you increase or decrease one, that will affect the other. So if you're going to increase training intensity, that might mean that you have to lower volume or keep volume the same, or you know maybe reduce frequency, whatever it might be, and vice versa. If you start jacking up volume, intensity might need to come down, frequency might even need to go up because we've seen that there's a per session limit to how much volume can be beneficial before we start to see regression and plateau, meaning that if we do too much volume within a workout, beyond a certain point, it's like flogging a dead horse. It's like you're not getting any more growth stimulus from that. You're just incurring more and more fatigue, which is going to impair your ability to induce a potent stimulant in the subsequent workouts, or at worst, delay when it is you can get another stimulus. Yep. So it's going to increase your recovery time. And a lot of the research has actually started to elucidate that these variables are often not looked at together, because we've seen that many people have taken the volume is a primary driver of hypertrophy discussion, and they've just run with that. But if you actually take a close look at the research, the studies that show increases in hypertrophy with up to 40 sets or more per week, they've had very short rest periods of 60 to 90 seconds on multi-joint exercises, meaning that there's no way that you can recover enough to maintain a high enough absolute load, so weight on the bar, over the course of that workout, because you're just not recovering because there's so much central fatigue.
Yeah, they would drop.
So their intensity is dropping, which means that their volume, as it's going up, is it needs to go up to make up for the impaired growth stimulus with the drop in load.
Yeah.
Right?
Makes sense.
Whereas the research that's found that lower set weekly set volume, so of like 8 to 15 sets per week, and then any more than that, they start to see regression and even muscle loss, those studies have had longer rest periods.
Makes sense.
Meaning that intensity is higher, right?
Mm.
So it's really important then when we look at the variables and volume, you know, being the primary driver of hypertrophy and intensity, the people in the high intensity camps, it is not a either or situation.
Yeah.
There is a sweet spot. There is certainly a case to be said for you know, biasing your training in one direction if that works for you. For example, if you prefer higher volume training and you don't want to lift as heavy, you don't want to go as close to failure, you could definitely build muscle that way. But if you're a little bit constrained for time, you love going balls to the wall, that's totally cool, but you might need to train with a little bit less volume. You know, you can go either way and get good results. But it isn't a either or situation.
Yeah, I don't think there needs to be two camps in that. Like, there tends to be like a lot of people proposing that there is two camps, and it's like, okay, you're either high intensity or you're high volume. But it's like, okay, why don't we try and hit some middle ground here and take the best of what's in both of those camps, if there is such a thing, and then use them to develop a training program that's going to be conducive to growth. You know, and that might be for like, if I'm working with a more of a gen pop client who has two sessions in the gym each week for 45 minutes a session, we might be using more of a high intensity technique with lower volumes so that they can get in and out and still, you know, stimulate growth. Whereas if I've got someone who loves to be in the gym and they're cranking 6 days a week, okay, we're gonna have to drop the total intensity of, you know, the exercise down and maybe increase that volume a little bit more.
Yeah, totally. I think that both approaches are very valid, and that's where individualization is a really important principle of program design, and we need to respect that when we're putting together a program.
Okay, cool. So let's just teased that out a little bit. So we've got a general idea of, okay, 5 to 30 repetitions basically is sort of the sweet spot, and we need to be trained with a sufficient intensity. So, you know, anywhere from, say, would you say 4 reps in reserve or so would be sufficient? And so if we look at those as sort of the main things we want to look at, if we're looking at a client who is possibly wants to be in the gym 4 to 5 days a week, and they want to grow as much muscle as possible, they want to get a little bit stronger, but the main goal is, okay, I want to get jacked. How can we put that together into a training week? You know, taking in mind volume, intensity, frequency.
Yes. So firstly, just to pick apart the, they want to get stronger and bigger.
Right.
It is necessary for you to get stronger if you want to get bigger. Mm-hmm. Because a bigger muscle relative to its size can produce more force, meaning that it can lift more weight. So people often look at strength and hypertrophy as very separate training goals, when in fact there's a lot of carryover. Strength is a lot more specific than hypertrophy. And what I mean by that is, to increase strength, there's a very high neuromuscular component to it, which is skill and technique. So when we break down what it is you need to achieve when you're training for strength, is you need lift specific exposure. You're going to get stronger in a specific rep range at a specific absolute load as a percentage of your 1RM. It's range of motion specific, and it's joint angle specific. So those things need to be considered when you want to get strong. Now, for hypertrophy, like I said, we're just looking at a stimulus, right? That magnitude, duration of tension, and that's what we need to tick.
Right.
So it's a lot less specific. Yeah. However, when we get that tension, what happens is the muscle gets bigger. As the muscle gets bigger, in order to keep pace with your adaptations and continually provide that growth stimulus, you will need to increase either the magnitude or duration of tension. And that means that you're going to have to put more weight on the bar, you're going to have to do more repetitions, more sets, all those sorts of things. So if you're trying to get big, you will get stronger. It's just a different proxy of strength, if that makes sense. We're not looking at a 1RM in the very traditional sense. You'll be getting stronger in the rep range that you're training in, and that's a good sign that you're building muscle.
Right.
If over the course of a training program you're able to add more weight to the bar in the 5 to 30 rep range for multiple sets, that's a very good sign that you've built some muscle. If, of course, you've achieved all those very beginner and base level neuromuscular adaptations.
Right, yeah.
So then how we put this together in a program, you start with, again, looking at how much volume you need for the individual. And if it's, say, 10 sets a week per muscle group, and they're going to train 4 times a week, you could simply put that 10 sets per workout. And then from there, proximity to failure, you would have generally a lower proximity to failure, so relative intensity for highly technical like multi-joint exercises, such right. as your squats, your deadlifts, things that can cause a lot of fatigue, as well as have a higher risk of injury. So you might have those anywhere from a 6 to 8 RPE, for example, and then your accessories and things like that, you could have a little bit higher proximity to failure, say 7 to 9 for the most part, RPEs. And that's how you would start to then divvy up where that volume and intensity goes for various exercises. And then there's a lot of nuance to this.
Yeah.
So if somebody wants to get better at the squat, they'll obviously be squatting maybe twice a week. If they're a beginner, they'll obviously perform the same workouts in succession until they get to the advanced level, where you start to need to vary things, intermediate level, sorry, where you start to need to vary things a little bit more, which might mean varying intensities, volume within a session, as well as exercises. But for the most part, writing a program, the key is to look at how much volume do they need, how can I distribute that in a way that's going to provide a stimulus and allow for recovery from session to session, what intensities are going to be best, relative intensities, that is, for the exercises, and then that they want to be training. And then when it comes to the rep ranges for those exercises, rep ranges are generally self-selecting towards an exercise.
Yeah.
So, you know, your heavy barbell movements, you might be training the 5 to 10 rep range. Your dumbbell movements, such as like dumbbell press, incline dumbbell press, those kind of movements, you might be training them in the 8 to 15 rep range. And then your machine cable work, you could be doing the 10 to isolation exercise, 10 to 20 rep range and beyond. So
yeah.
That's generally the broad framework that I work through when I'm putting together a program for hypertrophy.
Yeah, it's really
did that
good.
Answer that?
Yeah, it's bang on. And I think just to go back to rep ranges, it's quite interesting because that it almost seems like a real bro approach, right? With the rep ranges, it's like what it's married to the exercise, and it's almost been done for the longest time, and that was considered like what the bros always did was like, okay, isolation lifts, we're doing leg extension, we're going to do 15 reps, we're going to do 20 reps. Okay, if we're doing a heavy squat, we're going to do 5 reps. It's like that was always done for a longest period of time, but now it's actually like, okay, that makes sense from like a anatomy point of view or from a research base as well, that it actually works best for that exercise. And, you know, so I don't think there needs to be hard rules on what rep range is going to work best for what exercise, but it's actually like, hey, some rep ranges actually do just suit the exercise better because you're not going to go onto a leg extension and do sets of 4, you know. So yeah, totally. Great point there. So in terms of, so we've covered a little bit on the training program sort of things. In terms of actually measuring muscle growth, I think this is something that people get confused about a lot. And it's one of those ones that's, you know, if you're measuring strength, cool, you just measure what's going on the bar or what's going on in your training program over time. But when you're measuring muscle mass, it's a slow progress. And you've also got other things that come into play, such as, you know, fat accumulation. And so one of the things I liked about your approach to measuring muscle growth was it was quite simple, but quite effective. And you actually mentioned a little bit about it before, but do you want to run the listeners through, like, what's a good way to actually know if you're progressing on a hypertrophy program? Are you putting on muscle mass or not?
Yeah, so it is a lot more complex than I think people give credit to, and I try to make it as simple as possible because at the end of the day, this is an applied science. So we're not privy to, you know, doing a muscle biopsy,
right,
or having, you know, very high-tech, you know, body composition assessment tools. So a DEXA scan isn't very accurate. You know, there's a lot of issues with obviously skin folds, even girth measurements, all these sorts of things. Not to say they're not useful, but nothing will accurately detect increases in muscle mass outside of muscle biopsies and things like this. So the best way to measure muscle growth for the general lifter coach is to look at what are the signs that we are doing the right things to be building muscle. Like, where do we need to see certain changes and on what time frames? The time frames is really important. So I think a good proxy is muscle soreness, and not in the sense that you should chase it, but I think that there should be some feeling or sensation during the workout. So if we're looking right at the workout, it's like you should feel your muscles at some point. Maybe not on a squat when you're in the low rep ranges, but,
yeah,
but afterwards you might be like, okay, yeah, I felt that tension, like I can feel something happening there. So there should be some tension component to, like, you can feel the muscles doing something when you're training. So I think that's a really important measure that you're doing the right things.
Right.
Beyond that, we should be looking at scale weight increases. So you want to be gaining on the scale anywhere from 0.25 to 0.5% of body weight per week. A very slow rate. It's not going to be, you know, a kilo every week, that kind of deal.
Yeah.
Which means we probably need to be in a calorie surplus.
Right.
So measuring the tension side of things whilst you're training is the acute measure, then your scale weight week to week. Then you want to be looking at, over the course of mesocycles, your training performance in the moderate rep ranges across multiple sets. You want to see that increase specifically on isolation exercises because they have a very low neuromuscular component, so
right,
very low skill. So basically, you can only do more reps or more weight if you've got bigger muscles.
That's right, yeah. So something like a, like we mentioned before, a leg extension,
correct,
would be great for that to measure progress.
Correct. Yeah. So they're the first three. Then you want to be looking at your girth measurements. So like your tape measure around the bicep, around the quads, whatever target musculature you want to be seeing changes in. If you want to be doing that, I'm not a massive advocate on pushing that because I think if you take care of the others, you're all good. But if you do want to have those measurements, it helps. And then finally, your visual photos, because that's what you're doing it for, right?
Yeah.
So you want to be looking at the visuals, and they obviously take a lot longer to see the changes, especially if you are gaining some body fat, those kind of things. So I think if you're ticking the boxes of feeling some tension on the muscles whilst you're training, after your training, and you're seeing the scale weight go up a little bit every week, your girths are increasing, you're adding weight to the bar in the moderate rep ranges, or you're adding more reps for the same weight, and you're seeing the visuals improve over the course of months, I think they're the primary things you want to be looking at when measuring muscle growth.
No, that's bang on. So in terms of the muscle gain rate then, also the body weight gain rate for a massing phase, for example, you mentioned, say, 0.25 to 0.5% of body weight per week. Okay, cool. So it's quite a slow approach. Do you think there's any benefit to going faster, or what would be the trade-off of going into a such like a heavier bulk? Because I was having a discussion recently on a vegan bodybuilding Facebook page, and people are really confused about this, and a lot of people are just aiming for a huge surplus and a huge gain. And I had my own ideas based off a research paper that came out, I think it was last year, in regards to faster and slow bulk rates. Do you want to talk on that a little bit?
Yeah, so I think level of advancement and genetics are the two factors that play a large role in how quickly you can gain muscle. So whenever I give a range or prescribed numbers, they're just recommendations. They're not hard and fast rules that have to be applied to everyone in all situations. So you can definitely gain at a faster rate if you're a beginner. So you're new to training, you'll be able to build more muscle at a quicker rate than what you would if you're intermediate advanced. If your genetics, you've got those BBC genetics, and you're somebody who just, you know, brushes their teeth and they get a pump and start building muscle, you'll be able to gain at a quicker rate than somebody who's, say, a hard gainer or somebody who just struggles to build muscle. So you can go up to, say, 1%, of body weight, but at the same time, that's a pretty big increase, and I would say it's quite unsustainable. Anything less than that is going to be a little bit more safer, in the sense that you're more likely to be gaining at a rate that is conducive to a greater proportion of that weight being muscle than fat. I think if you're gaining any faster than that, then that's pretty quick and most likely going to be fat accumulation.
I think that's a good point to bring up. And maybe if we can just touch on a little bit, maybe the psychology side of this a little bit. For me, this is a big one, is almost the, you know, when going into a gaining phase, and I think a lot of guys are similar to myself, is that they don't want any fat gain, right? And it's this almost fear, this fat phobia of, okay, I'm gaining, but I want to keep my abs. Like, you know, I was having a discussion on Instagram just before I came in here with a guy, exactly that. He didn't really understand the phasic structure of having, you know, different dieting approaches to different styles of training. You know, if you're massing, obviously you need to be in a surplus, and there's going to be fat gain that accumulates. What do you think some tips are for people who are struggling with that psychologically, that they don't want to put on fat mass when they're gaining?
Yes, I think it is a tough one. I think one of the best things that people can do is really understand that building muscle is an investment. You have to delay gratification, which is having your abs visible, in order to build an appreciable amount of muscle. But once you've made that investment and you've laid the foundations, it is very, very easy, much easier than building muscle, to get back to a position where you can see your abs. However, you can't say the same for the inverse. You can't just build muscle and stay lean year round. Or you might be able to, but it's going to be very slow, and you'd be much better off gaining a bit of body fat, being in a surplus, ensuring that you're creating a conducive environment to muscle gain, than potentially spinning your wheels. And if after 12 months, you know, you haven't gained an appreciable amount of weight or muscle, and you look back and you say, well, what did I do the last 12 months? Yeah, I had my abs, but what was it for?
Right.
So I think you really need to have an honest chat with yourself and say, is the juice worth the squeeze? Do I actually want to build this muscle? Do I like the idea of building muscle? Am I just happy with the amount of muscle I have? I prefer staying lean. And if so, that's totally fine. But if you actually want to build muscle, you need to have that conversation with yourself, be brutally honest, accept it for what it is, and then start to plan out when you're going to be okay with having a little bit more body fat. So if you're somebody who wants to be leaner, there's obviously certain times of the year or certain occasions, events, whatever it is, that you would prefer to be leaner for. That's generally why we want to be lean. It's like, we don't really care if we're lean when we go to work and we put our clothes on and so on and so forth. But it's like, oh, if we're going to the beach on the weekend or I'm going on a holiday here, yeah, I want to have my abs, and that's why I want to be lean now, because I don't want to lose that by the time I have this event. So if you can start to bias your gaining phases around times where you're okay with having a bit more body fat, I think that's one way you can sort of combat the psychological fears around fat. So that's one strategy. I think the other strategy is to also start by dipping your feet in the water. You don't have to gain at a stupid rate. That's going to make you feel uncomfortable, and then you just, knee-jerk reaction, go back to cutting or, start eating less.
Right.
Gain at a rate that you're comfortable with, that's within the parameters of what you need to be doing to be gaining, and then just slowly go from there. It's like fear exposure, right?
Right.
So you don't take someone who's afraid of heights, to the 40th story of a skyscraper. Put them in the elevator first. You say, this is the elevator, it's going to take you up. Okay, you can go in, have a look, you can walk back out at any time, have a look around. Next time you close the doors, you say, hey, I'm going to press this button, it's going to take you to level 2. All right, you've got the choice to do that. No stress. If you don't want to, you can hop out at any time. They go to level 2, slowly work your way up to getting into that desired ballpark of where you need to be in terms of the calorie intake as well as the fat, body fat that you need to be carrying to have reliable training performance, as well as see that scale rate increasing, the desired rate.
Well, would there then be any benefit to, say, just maintaining body weight? So I had this question asked of me as I'm basically just kicking off a bit of a 16-week gaining phase at the moment, right? Lean gaining phase, I'm obviously a little bit leaner at the moment and I want to put on some muscle mass. However, I do have a scheduled mini cut in about sort of May, June. So the question is, okay, wouldn't it just be better to maintain during this period and then not have to go through a cutting phase where, during that cutting phase, you're actually going to be, you're not going to be building any muscle as an intermediate, right? So would it be better just to maintain and still have some, effect on, stimulus and muscle growth and still be able to benefit from that, or actually go through a gaining cycle and optimize the muscle growth and then go for a shortcut later on?
Yeah, so I'm a big fan of not trying to chase two rabbits at once, because the more training goals you have at any point in time, the more thinly dispersed your adaptive resources are across those training targets. So if you're trying to maintain body fat as well as increase muscle growth, there's obviously a trade-off that you're making there, in that you're not providing enough resources to go towards synthesizing new tissue. So you might be able to synthesize a tiny bit of tissue and maintain your body fat, but nowhere near as much as if you said, hey, I'm going to be providing my body with enough energy so that it can synthesize this new tissue. If that means body fat gain, great, but I know that I'm going to put all my eggs in the muscle gain basket. So that's not to say that you can only have one training target, because there are many training targets that are complementary and we can have within the same training phase. But when they are on completely different ends of the spectrum in terms of what's required, and making one trade-off to one of them will significantly impair another, that's when we need to have a really hard look at what we're doing and ask ourselves if we're okay spinning our wheels and chasing multiple rabbits because we're going to catch none.
Yep.
And if that's the case and that's what you want to do, totally fine. People are able to do whatever they like. But at the same time, if you want to be good at something, that's why you got to go all in on it. And that's why I refer back to my example of my training and diet at the moment. I'm not pushing anything in one direction there because I want to push things in another direction.
Yeah.
And if I want to build muscle or get leaner, I need to make trade-offs, and I'm not willing to make those trade-offs. So that's where you do have to have some self-awareness and sort of catch out your logical flaws, because you can always justify to yourself, oh, you know, I do this and that and this and that. Like, I want to, you know, do all these boot camps. I want to do running. I want to get good at cardio. I'm going to do yoga. I'm going to do gymnastics. I want to do CrossFit, and I want to build muscle and lose fat. It's like, that is all well and good in fairyland.
Yeah.
In the real world, it just doesn't fucking work.
Yeah.
Right?
You can do it, but you'll be shit at most of them.
So the way that I like to think about it is, if I am cooking dinner and I get a phone call from my mum and my dog's barking and I'm trying to iron my shirt, I could probably do all those things at once. I could pick up the phone, have it on my shoulder, you know, keep cooking dinner, my dog's barking, I can probably like kick it while I'm cooking and I'm ironing my shirt, you know, with my other hand like this. But the reality is, I might get it all done, but the food's either going to be raw or burnt. I'll probably kick my dog in the face and have to take it to the vet. It's going to lose a tooth. I'm going to miss something my mum said. She'll crack the shits and be angry at me, and I'll likely miss a crease or burn my shirt. So I can do them all, but how well have I done them all?
Yeah.
Or I could say, look, I'm going to take my dog outside. I'm going to pat him, give him a treat. He's outside. Then I'm going to cook first, because ironing my shirt first will probably be a bad idea if I put it on after I've ironed it. So I'll cook my dinner, then I'll iron my shirt, and once I've eaten my dinner, I'll put my shirt on, and then I'll call my mum. That just makes a lot more fucking sense. And I think that is a very, very simple way to understand ordering and sequencing life. And we can transfer that and map that same logic onto to training and trying to achieve fitness, meaning getting good at something, in any training target. It's like, you can try to be a jack of all trades, but you'll be a master of none if you chase too many training qualities at once.
Yeah, so good. I think that's one of the biggest common issues, probably faults that a lot of new people to training make, is that they want to lose the fat and they want to build the muscle and they want to get fitter and all these things at once. And I'm constantly trying to hit home the importance of a phasic structure to your training. Okay, cool. Let's drop some of that body fat down. And as we do that, we're going to build some muscle mass, but then we're going to go into a maintenance and into a gaining phase and actually really focus on the muscle gain, or vice versa. We're going to focus on muscle gain right now and then later on we'll cut down. But it's like, let's have a little bit of a focus on one. Is there anything else that you would say, maybe like your top one or two biggest mistakes that people make when trying to, you know, maximize hypertrophy?
I think when people are trying to maximize hypertrophy, their biggest mistakes I see people make are doing things that are beyond what they need to be doing now to build muscle. And what I mean by that is, they will see somebody on the internet who's jacked and has the physique that they want, and they'll look to the things that they're doing now which don't align with what they need to be doing now, so they skip a lot of steps. It's like playing a video game. You're playing a video game, your mate's playing a video game next to you, and he's on the final level playing the boss, and you look over and you go, oh well, I'm just going to start doing the same moves that he's doing, but I'm on level one.
Right.
Well, number one, you don't need to.
Yeah.
Like, level one, you just need to move your character in a straight line, jump over a thing, you know, kill one thing, on to the next, and you've clocked the levels fine. Whereas he's playing the, you know, the highest level fucking villain, and that requires, you know, like very complex, very high level of skill and technical mastery of the game to be able to defeat him. So I see lifters do the same thing. They look to other people and they'll try to do what they're doing when it just doesn't need to be done for them.
Yeah.
So I think looking at where you're at and what you need to do, doing a needs analysis on your current situation to make sure that what you're doing is actually in line with what you need to be doing now. So then you're not jumping the gun and you have the ability to take the steps in a very sequential manner to progress and build your way up without having to have that harsh realization 2-3 years down the track that, fuck, I've been doing all this work, doing all these various bits and pieces. I didn't need to, and it didn't really help me accelerate my gains any further, and now you've run out of tools and you're just in a mess because you haven't actually learned the fundamentals and had to realize how you got to play the game, you know, being consistent, like picking up all the, you know, bits and pieces of in the gym knowledge and experience that you need to be able to progress in a way that's going to get you from point A to point B. You've just been running around in circles, and now you're like, oh, why aren't they there yet? And you got to start back from square one. So
Good, man. Yeah, so basically take the fundamentals we've discussed in this podcast and use that to whatever situation you're in currently. That's probably a good takeaway. Cool, man. So to wrap things up here, I want to ask you real quick, and this is obviously you're not a vegan yourself, and this is a vegan-based podcast.
But I hate vegans.
You hate vegans, yes. This is the worst guest to have on. Right?
I don't. I have multiple vegan clients, and they're great people.
Yeah, there you go.
And I think that, hey, if you want to do something, that's completely fine.
Yeah, and so I think, you know, for myself, I don't want this to be exclusively a vegan guest podcast, right? I want to have people on here that are from different backgrounds, different mindsets, different angles of things. But I think a lot of, well, all the stuff we talked about today, it applies to vegans and non-vegans. It's not any different. But from your perspective, I love to ask this question, is what do you see in the vegan movement as a whole that is possibly counterproductive to what they're actually trying to achieve, you know, in terms of how they spread the message and how they go about doing things? Is there anything that they can improve on in that? And this is, you know, this is great because it's you looking from an outside perspective.
I think that's a really good question. So firstly, I don't hate vegans.
Otherwise, we wouldn't be releasing this podcast.
That's right. You wouldn't even associate with me if that was true. I think there's a lot of merit to the fundamental tenets of a plant-based diet. I really do. I think it's a great thing. I think we don't eat enough plants as a population. So any message that is encouraging people to consume more plant-based matter is fantastic, and I'll endorse it to the cows come home. What I don't like, and this applies to any dietary approach, is dogmatic and just fear-mongering, cherry-picking of science to push somebody's own ideological beliefs around nutrition onto other people in a forceful manner. So that applies to vegan diets, it applies to paleo diets, it applies to if it fits your macros, it applies to carnivore diet. That is across the board. You know, be very apathetic about your diet, right? It's your choice. You do it because you want to do it. That doesn't mean that everybody else has to do it. Can you promote the benefits of a plant-based diet when asked? Sure. As part of your business, can that be an approach that you encourage other people to try to see if they like it? Fine.
Yeah.
But it should be something that you force upon others because your diet is a very personal thing. It's just like, it is like religion, unfortunately. You know, and we shouldn't go around telling people that they should adopt XYZ religion because that's what you adopt. You know, is a very personal matter. So I think that people need to respect that. And when they're falling into the camp of, you know, a certain dietary paradigm or approach, they need to be aware that, hey, that's what they're doing. Not everyone else has to do that. But then they also need to be very considerate when they are falling into a certain community that they don't become just a blind follower and succumb to the echo chamber of their community that just reverberates and amplifies the same message, and they get lost and just, you know, become just a victim to the diet, if that makes sense. It's like you should still have your critical thinking hat on when you're under the umbrella of any diet, and be willing to change over time.
Yep.
You know, and I think just be careful in attaching your identity so much to a particular diet, because yeah, I think there's a lot more to people than what they eat.
No, it's really good.
I think what we eat is a big part of who we are and our society and culture, and it says a lot about the things we value and believe in, and I think that's fantastic. But I think that our morals, our values, you know, our beliefs in other areas, and our attitudes, and our behavior are far more important aspects of our identity than what we put in our mouths.
Yeah. So. Yeah, no, it's really good. And I think that's, you know, part of the reason I wanted to kick off this podcast as well is to, you know, cut through some of the misinformation around the vegan diet as well.
And you can use that as a platform to help that community to, you know, be a little bit more balanced and all those sorts of things. And obviously promote, you know, plant-based approach and the best practice and most evidence-based ways to do that, which is, I'm sure, what you're going to be doing. But, yeah, I think if you're in a community, it's like you can always help people in a very positive manner within that community without driving the same you know, dogma and echo, you know, chamber mentality that a lot of other people within those communities can do at times.
Yeah, and it's so easy today with the social media, basically, is what it comes down to. It's like, okay, cool. Suddenly you follow a few people that agree with you and suddenly you're in an echo chamber. That's all you see. So I think it's definitely important to have people that are going to maybe call you up on things and you know, viewpoints of different perspectives.
Yeah.
Really important. Good stuff, Jacob. Okay, so let's finish off, bro, with a couple of quick questions, eh? I don't think I gave these to you beforehand, so one word answers, I guess, would be great.
I'll try.
All righty. So I know you like some music when you train, man. So what is your favorite artist or song to listen to right now while you train?
Ooh, I have a few, but I'm a big fan of late of Japanese rock.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That is different. Mm. Okay, what's an artist that someone can look up? Do you have one?
My First Story.
My First Story.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Is it kind of like punky rock or is it, okay, cool, like it's poppy like punk?
It's like, you know, most anime shows. It's like the intros
to those.
That kind of,
So you trained to that?
Yeah.
That's awesome, man. Cool. I'll throw it on for my next workout. Let's check it out. Okay, favorite body part to train?
Oh, I reckon it changes every year, but I'll say I love training arms.
Fair enough, man.
That's the most bro answer.
You're known for the arm specialization cycle, so it only makes sense, man. One book the listeners need to read.
Oh, that's a good
one. It's a big question.
Well, I've just finished James Clear's Atomic Habits.
Man, that's popular today. Yeah, my last guest has said the same thing.
It's a great book, but I'll also add to that man, there's a lot of good books. I'll leave it at that.
Yeah.
I'll open up a can of worms. I'll start.
Atomic Habits. Yeah. It's one that seems to be on the recommendation list for everybody in 2020.
It's good.
And especially for coaches too, you know, help out with your clients. And it's on my Audible list. I haven't got to it yet though. Okay, best presentation from your point of view at the Ultimate Evidence-Based Conference to date. So we've had 2 years. What's been your favorite presentation?
Danny Lennon. Chrono Nutrition.
All right, man.
It's class.
Was that at UEBC last year?
Yeah, 2019.
All right. Yeah, that was... It's a different topic.
Yeah.
And it's an interesting one too. And he's doing a lot more on that at the moment, which is super exciting. Okay, last one for you, Jacob. You're going to become an animal. What animal do you choose?
Ooh. A silverback.
Oh, there you go.
There's Jack.
That makes sense, man.
There's Jack.
So good. All right, brother. So thanks so much for coming on. Do you want to plug anything while you're here, man? Do you want to plug the gym, plug the UBC? Go for it.
Yeah, people can just follow JPS Health Fitness on Instagram and JPS Education. That's where they'll find everything we're doing. UEBC, mentorships, courses, seminars, coaching, all that kind of stuff.
Yep.
If they want to check it out,
keeps going
that'd
on.
Be great. Yeah.
Perfect. I'll link all that for the guys in the description. And the JPS Education page is very, very good if people want a little deeper dive into nutrition and training. Some great infographics on there. But yeah, thanks for being on, man. Real pleasure.
My pleasure. Thank you.
And we'll be catching up again soon, bro.
For sure.
Sweet, bro.
Thanks, man.
Well, guys, there it is. Told you it was going to be a goodie. I don't know if you can get a more clear-cut overview of training for hypertrophy than that. I know you'll probably take something away from this to go and implement. And just remember, guys, that the foundations, the basics, fundamentals, they always work. It doesn't have to be super fancy. It doesn't have to be the latest Instagram workout that you've seen with three triple drop sets and giant sets and intensity techniques all over the place. If you implement the fundamentals, you will get those results, but it's just about consistency. And as I talk about with clients all the time, muscle building is a very, very slow process. So put those blocks in place, be consistent at them over time, and those results will come. You have to be in it for the long haul. Now, guys, really quick, be sure to hit me up on Instagram. I want to hear from you. I want to connect with you. Let me know how you found the episode. I guarantee there'll be someone you can share this episode with that will hugely benefit from a more evidence-based perspective of muscle building. Perhaps they've just got all the information from a Flex magazine or from the biggest guy in the gym. Send them this episode. Let them know what you thought. And then allow them to listen and see if it can help introduce some more evidence-based techniques into their life. Apart from that, guys, I hope you are well, healthy, you're staying fit, strong, training from home, training from the gym, wherever you're at. Be sure to give us a 5-star review on iTunes if you haven't already. And also, keep sending me through those recommendations for guests in the future. I'm going to be doing some more travel as soon as the international borders open up. So flick me a message, tell me where I should land, tell me who I should interview. And I can't wait to get over and do that. All the best, guys. Peace and more plants.